John Scahill,
yes,
here in Racoole. It sounds like Cahill, but it is actually Scahill. With a name like that, where did that originate from? Where did your people come from?
West of Ireland. My father came from Mayo, and there's a few of the names, and there's some of that name in Roscommon and Galway. But my father came from near Claremorris, a place called Carnacone. He came up here to County Dublin. He worked below on a big farm that was in Baldon and was taken over by the aerodrome. And the man that owned it then sold it to the British, and he bought another place down in Ballybohel, near Ballybohel, a place called Skiddoo, and they moved down there. And I was born down there. And
But just go back and tell me about the farmer that he worked for in Baldonnell, was it?
Yeah, he came up from Mayo. Joyce was his name, and he was a big cattle and sheep man, you know. He used to bring the cattle up and sheep and sell them in the Dublin market. And he had this farm in Baldonnell. He bought it some years before that. And then he sold it to the British, the best part of it, for the aerodrome.
Mm-hmm.
And moved down to Ballybuckle, then bought another place.
Of course, that and your father, did he go with him?
He did, yeah. That's there, right.
Yeah.
That's how I was born. I was born down there in Ballybuckle, in the big house.
Yeah. And was your father managing the farm for him?
Well, he was
helping.
He was what you call. He was. He would be what you call herd and drover.
Herd and drover.
Yeah, we used to go to the Dublin market a lot in those days. He used to walk the cattle and sheep in those times, you know. And he went a lot to the Dublin. My father must have went to the market for over 50 years in Dublin, you know. There's no cattle market there now, of course.
Yeah, and you were born yourself in 1919.
That's right.
Which makes you 89. And I'm sure you remember driving the cattle in.
Oh, yeah, sure. I drove them myself. For years, my father then, you see, around 1930, he bought a place in Balherry near Swords, and we used to have cattle of our own. We'd drive them along to the market and to the sales in Dublin, you know, in those years. Well, it was easy enough to drive them in those times, because when you'd start out, you might travel maybe 4 miles before you'd hear a car coming.
Yeah.
Might be a dairy man now would appear first on the road in the morning, and then there'd be five or six fellas on bicycles going to work in Dublin, you know. But it was quite easy that time. But then when you got to Glasnevin, you had a bit of a problem, because the trams were there that time, you know, and you couldn't move. The tram was on the track where it couldn't move, you know. And you had sometimes the cattle go, half of them this side of the plain, the tram, and half of them the other side, you know. But it was, you could manage, because you had the comfort of not much traffic on the road, you know. You see.
Yeah. Were you many days successful? Were all these sales, I'm sure the 30s weren't that easy.
Oh, no, sure. When the economic was, I was very young that time. But at that time was the economic war, and people couldn't get a price for anything, you know. There was no buying on cattle or sheep at all, and the wages for farm workers that time was very small, you know. And our times were very bad in the early 30s. And then they improved a bit when we got into the 40s. And the next thing then was we had the war. And that brought a great scarcity too, and everything was rationed.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of way, you know.
But in the 30s, what did you do? Did you actually drive the cattle home again when they couldn't be sold? Or did you even bother bringing them into the fair?
Well, we used to bring them into the market, but then if there was any cattle going home, there'd be ones that would be bought, you see. There'd be sales in the market after the market.
But this is now during the early 30s.
Yeah?
Yeah. You'd sell away, but it would be difficult to sell, though.
It was, and then, you see, what happened was you'd get such poor price for for what you sold that you wouldn't bother to buy, you know, because if you bought them, they'd be hanging around there and you wouldn't get them, you wouldn't make any money on them. But you always had the few that you would rare, you know, that kind of way. Sure, I knew a friend of mine that I don't knock around with now, he lives down there in Newcastle. He said his father brought two cattle to the Ferenais around the early 30s, and no one even came to look at them. And he was coming home, and when he came to Black Church, he stood and he said, "Will I bring them on home, or will I run them up the by road and leave them there?" couldn't get a bob for them, you know.
Yeah. They were worthless.
Worthless. No, there was no buying, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the fairs generally, you know, you said they got better a little bit after that again.
Oh, yes,
they
did.
And was it all cattle, or did you bring pigs and bonnets?
Well,
if
you brought pigs, you'd have to have a horse and cart and a creel, you know. And then after a while, of course, when the lorries came on the road, the lorry would pick them up and bring them in for you, you know. And then as time went on, the lorries came, and if you had a few sheep or a few cattle, the lorry would bring them, and gradually the lorries men took over, you know. Mm. Things got a bit better, and you were able to pay them to bring them in, you know.
Yeah.
But
did you leave school at an early age to help out at home?
I was reared here in Ratcool, you see, with my grandmother.
Oh, were you?
Yes.
They sent you up here?
Yes. Well, I was reared here in Ratcool with my grandmother. And I was about the same age now as Mary McNally's brother, that's Lister. He was about his age. And we went to school here in Ratcool. You see, what happened to me was, when I was about a year and a half, my other brother that was younger than me, when he was about a month old, mother was very bad with pleurisy. And that's thought at one time that she was as good as gone, but she made a marvellous recovery. And in the meantime, I was brought out here to Ratcool to my grandmother. That was her mother and her sister. And they reared me on. And when my brother Bill got better, I remained on here.
And what was your grandmother's name?
Cullen.
Cullen's.
She was Cullen.
Yeah.
Cullen.
Mm-hmm.
And Cullen. And then I stayed with my grandmother, and she died in 1937. I was 18. So I went home to my father and mother that time, and I stayed down there for about 16 years. You see, I used to go every school holiday. I'd go down there for a fortnight, and my brother would come up here. Because, like, if I didn't do that, I would be lost to the family, you know. So, like, even though I was out, I was still one of them, but my heart was always in Ratcool, because I went to school and all in it, you know. So that's the way it was. And then...
Yes?
So I stayed down in Spilheary Swords then until about 1950. And I left then and went off to work in a couple of places. I worked on a stud farm out in County Meath. And then an uncle of mine died suddenly, and I came back to the other uncle. And we used to milk cows and sell milk and that, so I stayed on with them, and that's how I inherited the place then, you see.
But you were always in farming, so...
All my life, you see. And, and I was knocking around among the hunt horses and race horses, you know. The tafts were in the picture that time, and I'd be seeing horses going up and down every day, you know. And that was back in the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s. Yeah.
And that's when you started working with them. But after you finished with school and you, you know, you were back again working for a while with your father.
Yeah, I left Ratcool School, and I went to the Christian Brothers in Ace for a while. But it was hard going there, because my grandmother, Lord of Mercy on her, when you come home from school, she always had a lot of things for you to do, you know. But the way it was in the Christian Brothers in Ace, they were great teachers, but they'd show you how to do everything, but you had to bring it home and do it and have it ready for them the next day, you see. And you know, when you'd go home, you'd nearly want to close the door and start studying. But it was pretty hard on me, between having to do all the jobs and keep up with the school, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the way.
And did you find, you know, when you were with your father inside in the fairs, did you meet the jobbers and the fellows that were, you know, dealing, wheeling and dealing in the cattle?
Well, I knew all of them, you know, and...
Who were they?
Well, there used to be fellows that come from the north of Ireland, and just fellows would buy them today and sell them tomorrow, you know, if they could, but there's none of that now, you know, there's so much regulations now for that, but I knew a lot of them, you see. And then there was a lot of fellas in Dublin that time who were shippers. They were buying cattle for the shipping, you know. They'd buy them, they'd get commission for buying them, you know. But then, of course, the way it is in those days, you'd be a young fella, you see, and the older men held on to everything. You never got much chance, you know. You were all the time following them around, you know, and you get a bit cheesed off at it, like, you know.
They were the bosses.
I don't want everyone listening to what I'm saying, but that was the case, you know.
I'm sure it was. Yeah. I'm sure it was difficult for a young lad, you know, to get involved and take charge at all.
You'd say to yourself, you know, I wonder when will I grow up, you know, and then... The older men, you know, they had this idea of being the head of, they'll never be the likes of us, you know, and they'd be meeting and talking and praising one another. And you know, that in that time we had very good sheepdogs, you know, that know every turn along the road. And sometimes I'd say, just scratch around, we all sheepdogs. You know,
including yourselves.
Yeah, because that was to go here and go there and
obey the orders.
And what kept you and all this kind of racket, you know. Very little for it, nothing for it in those days at all. Yeah. People get paid now for doing everything, but we got nothing for it. Plenty of hardship.
Yeah, your keep and your food, and I suppose, you know, for how many, 16 years you stayed with your father?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And then, of course, the other lads came along then and kind of went, youngest. Yeah, well, the youngest brother of the family, there was 11 of us all together, but the youngest brother of the family, he has the farm down there now, you know.
It's usually the eldest, isn't it?
Yes, if he stays.
But did most of your brothers and sisters, did they immigrate or...?
No. A second fella joined the army, and he did 6 or 7 years, did 7 years during the 40s. And then when he came out of the army, he got into the customs and excise. And then, of course, the next brother then, he became a priest. And he died in 1983. He was down in County Monaghan. And then there's two of my other brothers died. One brother used to work in a butcher shop there in Swords. And I had a brother then. Second youngest fella, he was working for Evo, you know, the sticky stuff. For them, you know. And sometimes he'd be driving the old tractor a bit in the evenings, and lads would say to him, "Now, keep away from that tractor, Michael. Stay with the sticky fella, you know." But yeah, pretty good anyway, you know.
In 1932, you had the Eucharistic Congress.
Mm-hmm.
What are your memories of that?
Well, I remember being here in that cool school at the time, and there was a few of us mapped out, don't you know? Now, I can't really remember it, but what we did was we'd do a couple of visits during the week to the chapel, you see. And I know there was one man now, Michael Riley, he was about my own age. He died here about 2 months ago. And I'd walk up the top of College Lane, that's where the new bridge is down there, and he'd walk down and meet him. And the two of us would go to Sagar to do our visit, you know, back to school then the next day. And then we all went to the Congress in the park from the school.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we did. I remember that day well. John McCormick sang the Adeste, and there was huge crowds there that day. You know. Oh, a long time ago. Yeah, long time ago.
What was it? Were you all very excited about it? And
well, we were, you know, because the whole thing was new to us, you know, and to see so many people, you know. But it was a great spectacle, and so was the time that Father John Paul came here in 1979, I think it was. That was a great spectacle too, you know.
And how would you compare the two of them now? Would you say that the
Oh, there was a bigger crowd for John Paul. There was, definitely bigger. But there was a great crowd for that 1932 one.
Yeah.
I remember they marched from Sagard Chapel to Newcastle for the time of on the Sunday before the Eucharistic Congress. And they had a big banner, you know. If you'd be certain men in Sagard that time, I was thinking, to carry the canopy. But my uncle Paddy, he was a big, strong man. He used to play for the Mary's of Sagard, and he played for Dublin too. But some fellow went up and he carried this big banner, you know. And after a while, then the lad went up and relieved him, you see. Mm-hmm. Another fellow. But after they went a mile or two anyhow, Paddy went up, you see, and he carried him. And nobody relieved him. He carried it the whole way to Newcastle. And no one, I always think of it like it, they never went up to relieve him.
Oh, why not, I wonder?
I don't know the hell. It was all lack of thought. Well, you'd imagine someone would say, go up and take that old banner from Paddy, you know, and carry it a bit. But he often said that to me. He said, we've got to see, I was fit to collapse by the time I got to Newcastle. Right. And, you know, he was as strong as a lion, but...
Yeah.
Oh, it was too much.
Maybe he felt he could do it.
Oh, well, he could. He could do it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair. They left him there too long.
But he played for Dublin, didn't he?
He did. He played... what's this he told me? The Beat Loud in the Leinster final. They won the Leinster. And then they met Kerry in the semi-final. And of course Kerry waltzed around them, you see. And he always remembered the hiding Kerry gave them. And he never got any support. Then he was one of the founder members of the Mary's of Sagard after, you know, years after that.
What year would that have been? This was your uncle now. This has been in the 1920s?
I would say now, I wouldn't remember him playing in Croke Park, but he used to say, I think it was about 1922.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's right.
My goodness, they were the early days of football. Mm, mm. And what was your... He was Paddy...
Cullen.
Cullen, yeah.
He was an uncle of my brother and my mother, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about yourself? Did you ever play any games or...?
I played a couple of old junior matches down in Swords, but not much, you know. Well, we used to kick a lot of football in the field at the back of the house, you know, and that. But I was never really very great at it, though. I had two brothers who were fair good footballers. One of them is dead, Lord of mercy on him.
Mm-hmm. But going back to your own life, going through then during the war years, the emergency period.
Yeah.
Now things were really rationing and all
right.
of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
You had to have vouchers for tea and sugar and things like that. You know, and everything was scarce, and of course there was no electricity. The electricity. It was installed for to work machinery and that kind, but there was no light in the houses now until about the 50s. Yeah, you'd be going around at night with a lamp, you know, a storm lamp. And the electricity was a great thing when it got going, you know.
But you saw the horses anyway going up and down to Goff's up the road, so...
No, I saw the horses down in Taft's.
Sorry.
Being trained, you know. Tom Taft was training there for a long time. My uncle Paddy, he worked for Tom Taft for about 40 years, I'd say, you know.
Is that how you got a job then? Did you...
No, I didn't. I never worked for... Although I was in Taft's when I was a kid. I used to be there on a Sunday evening looking at the horses getting fed and everything like that, you know. And But I never worked in taps, you know.
But when you got that job with the horses down in Westmead, isn't it?
County Mead, Clonee.
In Clonee. How did that come about?
Well,
you were
Tom Taft recommended me for the job because Mrs. Wellesley was a horsey woman, you see. She was looking to herd. She had left her gone. His mother died or something. But that's how I got the job anyway. So I was down there for a couple of years. And I enjoyed it all down there, you know.
What was it like? What was your job? What were you doing?
Oh, I had the job looking after the cattle and sheep. And I had very little to do with the horses, but I took an interest. I knew about them, and I knew their breeding and the foals and mares and all that, you know. I knew all that because it was interesting, you know. And then they get them ready and send them over to the sales in England, to Doncaster. Yeah. But then she went down in the world after that too.
Money, you mean money-wise?
Yeah.
Why? Because the horses weren't going that well, is
horses
it?
Horses weren't going that well, and then she had a lot of mares that were gone too old, and some of them were breeding and had never won races, you know, and there was very little demand for them. Yeah, that kind of way.
What did you do then, John?
I came back then. One of my uncles died suddenly, and I came back then here to College Land, and I stayed with them for a good many years. Mm-hmm. See, I sold that place here about 2 years ago, you know, down the road as you go around for Newcastle. That's how I come to be here. So.
And what was it? It was a farm down there.
A farm, yeah, about 25 acres. Yeah. And Con McCarthy, of course, has all the land bought down around there now. You can see all the buildings. If you look down, you see all the big warehouses built, you know.
Yeah.
And, I had no choice, only go because there were buildings beside me, you know. And one field was rezoned, and I had no choice. And then, along with that too, it was getting a kind of risky living there on your own, you know, because there's a lot of breaking, a lot of lonely. It's all right when you have people with you, when you're active, you know. But in one way or the other, right, the pressure was on, you know what I mean? They were all selling, so I had to go too.
And did it kind of break your heart to leave it?
No, yeah. It didn't. I found an awful change, of course. When I came here, like, I miss out on a lot of the things I was used to, but I'm quite happy here, you know.
Yeah.
When I go out to the village, like, I meet a lot of people that I know, and that kind of way, you know.
You never got married, did you?
I did, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I got married all right, well, not too early in life, and married a very good girl, and she lived 10 years, and she died then of cancer, of course. We're 10 years married when she died. So she's about 16 years dead now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was she a local woman here?
She was from Walkinstown, just down the road there. She was born and reared in Dublin.
Did you regard yourself as a country lad living in the outskirts of Dublin City? I mean, are were you a true dub? Did you consider yourself?
Well, I would never get hot under the collar about it. But I would never say anything else, only that I was a dub. You know, I'd always stand up for the dubs, and sure, every fella stands up for where he comes from, because if he didn't do that, he's no good. You know. Sure, I followed the football and. Years ago, like, we used to travel to the matches and that, you know.
I would imagine that, you know, it's a changed city now when you go and come and that, yeah.
Sure, I saw Dublin. when you'd go into Dublin at night and you maybe go to the Metropole or the National, you'd come out then and you'd be walking along and you'd look at the windows here and the wind. You'd be in no hurry, you know. You wouldn't do that now. Yeah. You'd be afraid.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, years ago, back in the 60s and 70s, Dublin was a grand place. You could walk around at night, you know, and that kind of, but it's all different now. You see, the drink took over, you know. Drink took over. Dance halls were never the same from the time that money got plentiful and, you know, they'd all come up from the pub to the dance, you know, and be around. And a lot of the local halls were closed down on account of that, you know.
In the 50s, things were pretty bad again. They were the hungry 50s. A lot of people immigrated to England at that time.
Oh, yes. There was a lot of unemployment in Ireland in those days. And an awful lot of people went to England, stayed some time and come back again. And oh, yes, sure. Like, you have an awful lot of people coming into this country now in search of work. And sure, some years ago, we were doing what they're doing.
Yeah. And, it never entered your head to emigrate, did it?
Well, it often entered my head, but I never went away. I never went away, you know. I was always able to knock it out somehow or another, you know. But times were bad for some people, you know. You see, in the years gone by, you might not have much money, but if you had a bit of land, you see, you always had vegetables and stuff that you could tide over, you know. Mm. Anyone had a bit of land or that could, you had cows and milk and stuff like that, you could manage. But a lot of people who had no land at all, like, it was very hard to get, and if they get work, the wages was very low, you know.
Yeah. Did you see farming change a lot throughout the years? When you were working with your dad way back in the late 20s and early 30s, and I'm sure it was a different way of farming in those days.
Yeah, everything was done at an easy and slow. Everyone did the job and got there, but it was a slow process, and there was no lack of manpower. There was always plenty of help, and then they came along. When the machinery got plentiful, then the men seemed to get scarcer. And they were all going to work elsewhere. Now you have to bring in a big machinery and get the thing done by contract, you know. But you won't get anything done cheap now, you see. But those days. And then in my young days too, you see, a lot of people were eager to help, even if they didn't get anything for it, you know. Putting up a field of hay now, they'd hop out there and help you. And they'd never look for payment, you know. They believed in helping one another, you know, and if they had vegetables or anything like that, they'd share with people that are in scarce places, and you know, but there's none of that now at all. It's all about money now, you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was the farming like? Was it dry cattle or wet, or were you milking?
Oh, mostly dry cattle, and we'd milk a few cows for the house and rear a few calves, you know, that kind of way. And my father never dairied, never done any dairying, you know.
And how many acres on the land at that time?
Oh, my father had, he had 35 acres.
Yeah, and that wasn't too bad.
He bought the farm place first, and then he bought a little place down the road then, and between, there was free land down there, commons half the, that was taken up. But he wound up with something over 100 acres anyhow.
Between the two of them?
Between the two of them, yeah. Yeah, he did.
And how many cattle would he have, you know, and I know that, I suppose, dry cattle are a lot easier to handle and to keep.
Ah, yeah. He'd often have 40 or 50 in the summertime, but he wouldn't keep as many over the winter, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else was on the farm? Were pigs reared?
There'd be three or four. Sometimes he had a sow once or twice, and she'd have 9 or 10 young ones. And then he used to keep a few sheep as well, you know.
Yeah. And would you kill your own pig there, or would
He did. There was a pig killed a few times. I remember a couple of pigs being killed, you know. And there'd be a woman that'd come in then, and she'd make the black puddings, you know.
A local woman?
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there wouldn't be a bit of that pig that'd go to waste. It'd be all used.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you think if you got a pig killed that you're going to have bacon for a long time, and it's amazing the way it's... Ways to move off, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was mostly eaten with the cabbage and potatoes.
Oh yeah, so. Cabbage and maybe turnips. Bacon and cabbage was the real Baha'i in those days, you know.
Yeah. When you think of the woman in the house, your mother. And I know your mother died. Mm-hmm. You know that she was unwell when you were very young.
Oh, but you're. She came on at home. She got perfect. She was very sick, but she made a complete recovery. I think she lived to be 85.
Did she not?
Mm.
And did she?
Father lived to be 94.
Would she have kept some fowl or?
She have a few hens and chickens and just a rare turkeys for Christmas time. You know, sell a few of them and that. She always had turkeys.
And was that that was the Christmas money, wasn't it?
That's true.
Would your mother have been a woman that, there was no washing machines, there was no...
Oh, not at all.
She would have cleaned that clothes.
A big tub and around her washing board And then when we kids would be getting washed, there was a big tin bat, you know, on the floor and they'd all have to get in and... There was no real bathrooms or taps around in those times, not a bloody hell. Everyone had to be scrubbed on a Saturday night, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ah, wonderful the way people could manage, you know. Had a mercy on them all.
I do know that probably women put in as much work into managing as... You know, they were the backbone of the...
They had to and more because, you see, like children come along one after the other, you see, and the man would always have his work to do and his places. He could go off at 5 a.m, he wouldn't be home till 10 that night, but the woman had it all in front of her all the time. That's why I always maintain... You know, you'll hear a lot of talk nowadays about marriages being broke up and up and this, but I always find that where there's children and things go wrong, the woman is the real sufferer. Because you take two people now who are actually at one another's throats, well, still, they won't walk away and leave the children. A woman, if she's any, she'll stick to those children no matter what happens, you know, and they're left in a tough situation. They definitely are.
Most marriages in the past were arranged marriages. You know, they was your father and mother arranged?
No. He came up from the west of Ireland and they met and that was it. Mm-hmm. And I suppose she could have been married to the local fellas around here, but that's the way it came. But there was a lot of... There was a lot of planned marriages, you know, and not a good thing either, you know.
Hmm. I suppose not indeed, yeah.
No.
But where your father had the farm, what was the name of the town's land again?
Where they're down there now?
Yeah.
Balhairy Swords.
Balhairy.
It's a good bit away from Swords, but it's in the Swords area, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Swords is a big town now, you know.
Is it all built up now, or is
Well, around Swords is all built up.
Yeah, but where your father had the farm.
But right now where my brother Martin is down there now, it's a green belt.
Yeah.
And Martin's two sons often say to me, isn't it most unfair now, if we want to build a house here, we can't. It's
restricted.
So yeah. Whether it'll ever change or not, I don't know. But any houses that are down there now are okay. But I know my brother Martin gave a site to a niece. She was the first niece, we first grandchild. He gave us out to her, and that's the only house that's built on his land.
Can you remember the names of the fields down there at home?
Well, all I can remember them fields down there is, you see, there'd be old timers around the place, and we had two fields, and they say, that's Green's field, and that's Carr's field, because those people lived in those fields years back. And then there'd be another field down that John Butler beside us had, he'd say, that's Cain's field. And you'd see Green and Cain and so on, and no sign of those people, but that was the names was on the field.
Yeah.
And then we had a field over across the field, to be about 5 acres in it, and it was called the Black Acre. And it was, you know, there was several acres in it. And
why was it known as the Black Acre?
I don't know the hell. I don't know why they called it the Black Acre. And then we had another field then, and it was called Cook's Field. And that's all I can remember. Different name. We had other names on them ourselves then.
Yeah. But it's interesting, isn't it? And any sign of any of the old houses that were...
Not a sign. No. Maybe there was never a house in it, but they were the names of the owners, you know.
Yes, at the time.
Just the same now, if you bought a field up the road, you see, from, we say, Dunn's owned it. Well, you'd always call that Dunn's field, you know.
Yeah, that's right. What about your own farm down here before you sold it? What were the names of the fields on that?
Well, the field across the road was called the Orchard. Whether there was ever apples in it or not, I don't know, but it was always called the Orchard. And the other one was the House Field. And the one beyond that was the Old Meadow. And that's all the names I could ever put on them. There's only three fields in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you any idea of the big house, or who the big house could have belonged to? Or was it part of an estate, I wonder?
Well, as far as I know, you see, you know Mary McNally now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I never say this to Mary.
She's your neighbour up the road now.
I know.
Yes. I'm going up to see
her
soon.
She's an old timer. But, you see, she was a Shiel. There were Shiels here, and there were Shiels for the great big houses below. Beechwood Lawns. They were cousins. But as far as I can figure, the Shields and the Cullens have, in olden days, were cousins.
Yeah.
And I know there was a woman here in Ratcool, and she was lived a great age. She was a historian. This Protestant woman could come to visit her one day. She said, our vicar wants a little bit of history. And she said, she's the only one that'll give you any history around here is Catty Dunn. So, Catty Dunn, I wouldn't say this to Mary. Catty Dunn, oh, the Cullens, she says. The Cullens were the poor relations of the Shields. This is what Catty Dunn told her. Well, Catty Dunn's mother was a Fines, you see. Fines had the pub here in Ratcool in olden times. And I just said to myself, I wonder now, had the Fines any poor relations? I suppose they were so rich, as I, that they had no relations, you know. But this is the crap you have to listen to. But anyway, as far as I can figure out, the Cullen man that came around here, he would be my great-grandfather. And he came down from Ballynochan, where they quarried the granite. He was one of them Cullens, granite Cullens. And Mary McNally's ancestors could have come from there too. But he came down anyhow, and he went to go walk beyond Inverskiles. That's where the city, where Mansfield has City West now. And he married a girl with the name of Norton.
Yeah.
And the Nortons gave that holding the land down there to her. He married in, do you see?
Ah, yes. So that's the connection.
That's the connection.
Yeah.
And the ancestors of the Shields here, as far as I can remember, there was some high-ranking English man, English army man down here, and he married a Norton. And the Norton, the fella that she married, he died.
Mm-hmm.
And she was to be married to another high-ranking man like him, and it fell through. So she met Shield then, she married him, and he came down from Ballynochan direction, you see.
Ah, yes.
And this is how the Shields came to be immensely big people, do you see, because the Nortons had the land and kind of way, so, like, my great-grandfather, now I was telling Mary Shield this one day, my great-grandfather would be buried at the back of the Church of Ireland church down here. You see, if you go down, all the late people are buried in the front of the church, but in the back, all you'll see is a plain green stone sticking up out of the ground, and there's not a name or nothing on it. And that's where a lot of those people were buried during the famine time, you know.
Oh, right. It was a mass grave, so.
Yeah, well, that was probably a Catholic church at one time. And the Protestant, you know the way it took it, that time took it over. But I believe he's buried there. And my other man, my grandfather, of course, he's buried over in Saggart, in front of the chapel there in the graveyard.
Yeah.
And my grandmother is buried there too. But the Cullens came from Ballynochan.
And they were quarrying people up there, were they?
They were up there, but they didn't do any. But when they came down here, they were out of their work, you know.
Yeah.
But there's some of the relations of them up there still, you know. And that kind of way. But they originally came from Ballynochan. And that would be back about 1830 or 1835, I'd say.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Just before the famine then.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard them saying that my grandfather was a hardy young lad at the time of the famine, you know.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I just heard them talking about him, you know. Yeah. And in those days, you see, there was terrible home, but they had a field of oats that time. And, of course, at that time you had oats to take it up and ship it, you know. They shipped oats and wheat and everything to down along the North Wald. Everything went to feed the army. You could stay here and die with the hunger. But they held on to the oats, you see. And of course, the grandfather Cullen and his brother, they were great wrestlers, you know. They were great athletes and everything.
Well, were they?
Oh, yes. And that's how they were so strong, you see. They had the oats and were never starved in the famine time, you know. And then there was a mill with the parish priest in Newcastle there, mercy me. He's a gas man looking for history too. But he used to be up to me looking for names of fields and different. But he was talking to some woman anyhow about the Cartys. You see, Cartys had a great big mill down there, taken down now. But the Cartys were wrestlers too. And Mrs. Carty fed one lad on chickens to have them ready, but Cullen tossed them anyhow. The chickens didn't work. He went to America after, I think, got killed or something in America, Paddy Cullen. He was an uncle of my uncle, you know.
Yeah.
But that was the way they used to do wrestling in those days. They were strong men, you know. I wouldn't be anything like their size anyway.
But they survived the famine, and I suppose because they, you know, they kept themselves well and they ate well.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well,
that they came through it.
Yeah, there was other people too now. I heard them saying too, you know, you see, Lord Cloncurry, you know, the hill of Lyon over there where it used to be, was taken over by the Department of Agriculture, Department of Smurford, and some of them have it now. It's Lord Cloncurry.
Mm-hmm.
But Lord Cloncurry had this big, huge estate, and he was also landlord of the little places around, you know. And there's houses over there now at the present time, and there's a preservation order on. There were Lord Cloncurry's houses, you know, they wouldn't knock them. Well, you see, that time a lot of landlords had a bad reputation, you know, that you know, you had to do what they say. But Lord Glencore had a reputation of being a good landlord. No one, there was a tenant of his, or working for him, was badly off. They all got through the famine.
So he looked after them.
Yeah, he wasn't a bad fellow, you see. Mm. Yeah.
But I suppose, you know, some landlords did look after their tenants, and they took good care of them.
They weren't all bad, you see.
Yeah.
And then, see, it cuts both ways, because the tenants were there to look after them. You see, if you were living in a gate lodge, or if you were a tenant, you'd go out and you say, "This fella, who's this fella coming in?" Well, if you didn't like him, you wouldn't let him in, you see. And the lad up in the big house was being protected and all. He had to be protected, you know. But they weren't all bad, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did your people have any dealings with the landlords around here?
No, not that I know of. Not that I know of, no. No.
But you know, when you look at Racoole today and it's so different, your days going to school in Racoole, a small little village.
That's right.
A couple of shops.
Yeah. And you could break into every house in the village at night and you wouldn't get £100 in one of them. Hear of all the robberies that's been done now.
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake. And the pubs, there'd be 3 or 4 old men drinking a pint, and now there'll be lounge bars and cars outside and the devil knows what. Oh, it's just all changed. Yeah. All changed.
But, indeed, it was lovely listening to what you had to say, because it's such an interesting picture you painted of your time and the days.
Well, I hope I do the best I could, but I don't know. A lot of things I say, I hate saying them about me because I ramble on, you know. But it's all fairly true to the best of my knowledge, do you know?
Oh, yeah. It's a good story indeed, yeah.
Yeah. Grandmother down here, you know. She was born and reared below there at Kingswood and near Brown's Barden, where the hotel is. But anyway, she told me that when she got married first, they used to come down from the hills, you see, with sheep. Like when come to the back end of the year, they'd bring the sheep all down around Selbridge and Minuta, where they take fields of stubbles and anything that they could get, put the sheep. And they'd spend the best part of the winter down there, and then they'd bring them back home and let them out on the hills, you know.
Yeah.
But they used to shift them down. Well, she said, wouldn't know thing, they'd arrive, she says, and the sheep would be all out. That's just the field until you was orchard. Open the gate, let them all out, and they come in here, she says, and they get on and it was going. And if you'd no mattress around, they'd shake straw on the floor and they'd all dust in up the next morning. And off to Minute. See, that was a kind of a halfway.
Is that
and right? I'd hate, says I, walking in on anyone like that. Oh, well, she says, they were all a kind of relation, she says, and they came in here and made themselves quite happy, whether we liked it or not.
The sheep?
No, them owners of the sheep.
The owners of the sheep.
But the sheep would be in the field the far side of the road.
Yeah.
But they'd dust in, sleep in the straw or hay or anything. And up the next morning and off down to the rest of the...
My goodness. And these were people looking after the sheep?
Oh, yes. Just they had the sheep up
shepherds,
the,
I suppose.
They had the sheep up the hills, you see.
Yeah.
All the summer. And they take the land down here then, just get them... They were more safety down there. They'd be taking a chance down here too, you know. But they'd bring them all down grazing around the Selbridge and Minute direction, you know.
Yeah.
But that was the halfway break for them, and they were up the next morning and they had the whole day in front of them again, you see.
And off again.
And off again.
and they'd come in and they'd stay in the houses around here.
They'd just arrive, and the grandfather seemingly didn't mind them. He was partly used to them, you know.
Yes.
They had been coming all along, you know. All relations. And the way it is, there'd be no nonsense about them lads at all. They'd take on the out of home. You wouldn't want to be putting down tablecloths around for them fellas. You know?
Oh, I wouldn't think so, no.
No.
Did he mention any of their names, who they might have been?
No, but there'd be Cullens among them anyway.
Well, Cullens would be one of them. Yeah. There'd be relations.
Yeah, exactly. Up from the mountains, yeah. And yeah. Sure, my grandmother always used to say, sure, you know, she says, if you marry a girl from the mountains, you marry the mountains, because it'd be all friends and relations.
All you know. Her
You marry people. The mountains, she'd say.
You marry the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, John, it's Cahill with an S, isn't it?
Scahill.
Scahill, yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. Quite an unusual name, like I said
west
at the
of
beginning,
Ireland.
But it's West of Ireland.
West of
yeah.
Ireland, yeah.
Well, listen, thank you for telling me your story.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Good.